perceiving the Creator. Generations come and go, yet every generation and every individual asks the same question about the meaning of life. This happens especially at times of war, of global suffering, and during the periods of misfortune that befall each of us at some point in our life. What is the purpose of life, which is so costly to us? And shouldn't the absence of suffering be deemed as happiness? In the Ethics of the Fathers, it says, "Against your will you are born, against your will you live, and against your will you die." Each generation has had its share of misfortune. There are some among us who have lived through the Depression, through war, and post-war turbulence. But I see my generation being full of problems and suffering, unable to establish itself, and unable to find itself. In this atmosphere, the question regarding the meaning of our life stands out particularly clearly. At times, it seems that our life is more difficult than death itself. So it's no surprise that the Ethics of the Fathers states, "Against your will, do you live?" Nature created us, and we're forced to exist with the qualities that were imposed on us. It is as if we were only semi-intelligent beings, intelligent only to the degree that we're aware of the fact that our actions are determined by the characteristics and qualities that are inherent in us, and we cannot go against them. If we're at the mercy of nature, then there's no predicting where this wild, unreasonable nature can lead us, constantly causing conflict between individuals and entire nations who, like wild animals, are engaged in a vicious struggle of the instincts. Yet subconsciously we cannot reconcile the idea of ourselves on one hand and primitive beasts on the other. If, however, the divine force that created us does exist, then why do we not perceive it? Why does it conceal itself from us? For if we knew what it required of us, we would not commit those mistakes in our lives for which we are punished by suffering. How much easier would life be if the Creator were not concealed from human beings, but were clearly perceived and seen by each and every one of us? Then there would be no doubts about his existence. We would be able to observe the effects of his providence on the surrounding world. We would realize the cause and the purpose of our creation. We would clearly see the consequences of our actions and his response to them. We would discuss all our problems in a dialogue with him, ask for his help, seek protection and advice, and complain to him about our troubles and ask him to explain why he treats us as he does. Finally, we would consult with him for advice concerning the future. We'd constantly be in contact with him, and we would be correcting ourselves in accordance with his advice. In the end, he would be pleased, and we would benefit as well. Just as a child is aware of its mother from the moment of its birth, so we would be aware of the Creator. We would learn the correct way of life by observing his reactions to our actions and even to our intentions. The Creator would be perceived by us to be just as close as any mother, since we'd see him as the source of our birth, as our parent, and as the cause of our existence and of all future life. There would be no need for governments, schools, and educators. The existence of all nations would essentially focus on a wonderful and simple coexistence for the sake of a common cause apparent to all, which is the spiritual unification with the openly visible and perceivable Creator. Everyone would be guided in their actions by the open spiritual laws, called the commandments. Everyone would also obey them, since it would be obvious that disobeying the commandments would mean inflicting harm to the self, equivalent to jumping into a fire or off a cliff. If we could clearly perceive the Creator and his providence, there would be no difficulty in performing the hardest of tasks. The personal benefit derived from these tasks would be apparent. It would be as if we were giving all of our possessions to a stranger without thinking twice about the problem, since being aware of the Creator's rule, one would see the beneficial outcome of the selfless act and would know that one is in the power of the kind and eternal Creator. Just imagine how natural it would be, and also how unnatural and impossible it is in the present condition of divine concealment, to give ourselves fully to the Creator, to surrender all our thoughts and desires to him without reserve, and to be what he wants us to be. We would not have the least concern for ourselves and would give no thought to ourselves. In fact, we would cease to be aware of our own selves and would transfer all our feelings from ourselves to him, trying to approach him and to live by his thoughts and will. From all of the aforesaid, it should become clear that the only element lacking in our world is the perception of the Creator. Such a perception and realization should be our sole purpose in this world. This is the one goal we should spare no effort to achieve, for only the perception of the Creator allows an individual to get help, saving him both from the calamities of this life and from spiritual death. thereby according him spiritual immortality without having to return to this world. The method of searching for the perception of the Creator is known as the Kabbalah. The perception of the Creator is called faith. A common mistake in interpreting this concept centers on the idea that faith implies groping in the dark without seeing or perceiving the Creator. In fact, the meaning of faith is exactly the opposite. According to the Kabbalah, the light of the Creator that fills a person, the light of the connection to the Creator, the light that gives a feeling of unification with Him, called Or Chasadim, is known as the light of faith, or simply faith. Faith, the light of the Creator, gives a person a sensation of being linked to the Eternal, an understanding of the Creator, a feeling of complete communication with the Creator, as well as a sense of absolute security, immortality, greatness, and strength. It becomes clear that deliverance from our temporal existence and from our suffering, which is caused by the futile pursuit of transient pleasures, lies only in attaining faith, which is tantamount to perceiving the Creator. In general, the only cause of our misfortunes and of the worthless and temporal nature of our life is precisely our failure to perceive the Creator. The Kabbalah itself impels us, taste and see that the Creator is good. The aim of this text is to guide the listener through the initial stages of the path to perceiving the Creator. We see that since the creation of the world, humanity has suffered torment and pain in vast amounts and magnitude that has often been worse than death itself. Who, if not the Creator, is the source of that suffering? Throughout history, how many individuals have been willing to suffer and endure any pain in order to attain superior wisdom and to achieve a spiritual elevation? How many of them voluntarily subjected themselves to unbelievable anguish and agony for the sake of finding at least a drop of spiritual perception and an understanding of the higher force, and for the sake of uniting with the Creator and of becoming His servant? Yet they all lived out their lives without ever receiving a response and without achieving anything. They left this world with nothing, just as they had come into it. Why did the Creator ignore their prayers? Why did He turn away from them and scorn their suffering? All of these human beings subconsciously realized that there is a higher purpose to the universe and to all that takes place, called the drop of unification of a person with the Creator. Despite being immersed in egoism, and while going through unbearable torment, upon sensing the Creator's rejection, they suddenly felt a window open in their hearts, which had been hitherto closed to the truth. Until then, their hearts were incapable of feeling anything but their own pain and desire. It was due to this window in the heart that they were deemed worthy to experience and to feel that longed-for drop of unification penetrating the heart through its broken wall. Hence, all their qualities were altered to the opposite ones, resembling the qualities of the Creator. Only then did they realize that the unity with the Creator could be attained only in the depth of their suffering. Only then were they able to grasp the oneness of the Creator, since His presence was there as well as the drop of unification with Him. At the moment of experiencing this insight, it becomes evident to them and fills their wounds. Precisely because of these wounds of perception and cognizance, and because of the terrible soul-tormenting contradictions, the Creator Himself fills these people with an unbounded, wonderful bliss to such an extent that nothing more perfect could be imagined. All of this just to make them feel there was some worth to their suffering and agony in order to experience the ultimate perfection. Every cell of their body convinces them that anyone in our world would be willing to go through unthinkable torment in order to experience at least once in a lifetime something like the bliss of being united with the Creator. The silence of the Creator in reply to human pleas can be explained by the fact that people are much more concerned with their own progress than with glorifying the Creator. Thus their tears are empty, and they leave this world just as they entered it, with nothing. The end of every animal is eradication. And those people who have not perceived the Creator are as animals. On the other hand, if one concerns oneself with glorifying the Creator, He will reveal Himself to that person. The drops of unification, the purpose of creation, flow into the hearts of those who are concerned with the Creator's glory and love. They flow into those who, rather than complaining of the unfairness of divine rule, are completely convinced in their hearts that all the Creator has done is for their own sake and good. The spiritual cannot be divided into separate parts. an individual comprehends the whole only a part at a time, until he comprehends it all. For this reason, the success of a person's spiritual endeavor depends on the purity of his yearning. The spiritual light flows only into those parts of the heart that have been cleansed of egoism. When one looks objectively at the nature of our existence and at all that surrounds us, one obtains a truer appreciation of creation. According to Kabbalists who communicate directly with the Creator, his existence has implications for us. If the Creator in fact exists, and if he generates all the circumstances that affect our lives, then there's nothing more rational than to maintain a close contact with him, as close as possible. However, if we tried hard and actually succeeded in achieving this realization, then since the Creator is concealed from our perception, we would feel as if we were suspended in the air without any support. For without seeing or feeling or hearing or receiving some sensory input, in a way we're engaged in a one-way effort and we're screaming into empty space. Then why did the Creator make us in such a way that we cannot perceive him? Moreover, why should he hide from us? Why, even when one appeals to him, does he appear not to respond, preferring instead to affect us in a way that's hidden from us, concealed behind nature and our environment? If he desired to correct us, that is, to correct his own error in creation, he could have done so long ago, either directly or indirectly. If he revealed himself to us, we would all see and appreciate him to the degree allowed by the senses and the intelligence with which he created us. Surely then we'd know what to do and how to act in this world which was supposedly created for us. Furthermore, paradoxically, as soon as we strive to reach the Creator, to perceive him, to come closer to him, we feel our yearning for the Creator vanish, disappear. But if the Creator directs all our sensations, why does he deprive specifically those who desire to perceive him of this very yearning? And not only that, why does he put all possible manner of obstacles in our path as well? Such attempts to come closer to the Creator on one hand, and the Creator's refusal and infliction of suffering on those who seek him on the other, can continue for years. Originally, one might even feel that the pride and arrogance that a person is instructed to rid himself of is infinitely more characteristic of the Creator. If the Creator is merciful, especially to those who seek him, why doesn't a person receive a response to his tears and appeals? If we can alter something in our lives, it means that he's given us the free will to do it. But he did not endow us with sufficient knowledge to avoid the suffering of our existence and development. And if there's no free will, then what can be more harsh than making us senselessly suffer for years in the cruel world that he created? Certainly such grievances are infinite in number. And if the Creator is the cause of our condition, then we have much to criticize and blame him for, which we do when we experience pain and suffering. The Creator sees all that goes on in one's heart. When a person is displeased with something, the feeling of dissatisfaction can be interpreted as blaming the Creator, even if the blame is not directly addressed to the Creator, or even if the person does not believe in the existence of the Creator. Each of us is correct in maintaining whatever one's belief is in one's condition, irrespective of what that belief is. This is due to the fact that we maintain only what we feel to be true at that moment, and also what we've analyzed with our own mind. Moreover, those with vast life experience know how drastically their views can change throughout the years. It cannot be said that one was wrong before, but now one is right. One must realize that today's point of view may be proven wrong tomorrow. Therefore, the conclusions that one draws from any situation are correct for that particular situation, yet they can be directly opposite to the conclusions drawn in other situations. By the same token, we cannot assess other worlds or their laws, or judge them based on our own current criteria, the criteria of our world. We do not possess supernatural intelligence or perception, and we err constantly, even within the boundaries of our own world. Thus, we cannot draw conclusions about the unknown and pass judgment on it. Only one who possesses the prerequisite supernatural qualities can make correct judgments properly concerning what exists above and beyond the natural. The one who also possesses our qualities can more closely describe the supernatural to us. Such a person can only be a Kabbalist, a person of our world, created with the same qualities as each of us, but also endowed with other qualities from above that permit him to describe to us what goes on in the other worlds. This is the reason why the Creator has allowed some of the Kabbalists to reveal their knowledge to vast numbers of people in society, in order to help others to communicate with Him. In a language comprehensible to us, Kabbalists explain that the structure and the function of reason in the spiritual heavenly worlds is based on laws that are different and opposite in nature to our own laws. Faith above reason. There is no boundary separating our world from the heavenly spiritual worlds. But given the fact that the spiritual world is, according to its properties, an anti-world, it's placed so far beyond our perception that after we are born into this world, we completely forget all about our past anti-condition. Naturally, the only way for humans to perceive this anti-world is by acquiring its essence, its reason, and its qualities. How must we alter our present nature in order to acquire a completely opposite one? The basic law of the spiritual world is summarized in two words, absolute altruism. How can we acquire this quality? Kabbalists suggest that we undergo a transformation within ourselves. It's only in this inner act that enables us to perceive the spiritual world and start living in both worlds simultaneously. Such an act is called faith above reason. The spiritual world is an altruistic one. All the desires and actions that exist in that realm are not dictated by human reason or egoism, but rather by faith, by a sense of the Creator. If our common sense were a vital tool for our actions, then it would seem that a person's not able to completely free himself of his intellect. Given an intellect that doesn't allow him to see how he can escape from the circumstances that the Creator places in front of him in a hidden fashion, he'll be unsuccessful in resolving his problems. He remains afloat without support and without logical answers concerning what's happening to him. In our world, we're guided only by our own reasoning. In everything we do, reason, meaning pure egoistic, reasonable calculations, is the basis for all our desires and actions. Our reason calculates the amount of pleasure we experience and matches it against the amount of pain caused by the effort it takes to achieve that pleasure. We then subtract one from the other to produce the desired result, whether to strive towards pleasure or to choose tranquility. Such a reasonable approach to our surroundings is called faith within reason. In this case, reason determines faith. Often, humans act without any calculation of benefit or cost of effort, as in cases of fanaticism or conditioned behavior. Such blind acts are called acts of faith beneath reason because they're determined by blindly following decisions made by someone else rather than by reason or calculation. Also, human actions can be dictated by one's upbringing, having become second nature to such an extent that one has to make an effort to keep oneself from acting mechanically. The transition from living in accordance with the laws of our world to living in accordance with the laws of the spiritual world requires that certain conditions should be met. One must completely discard the arguments of reason. People must forsake the basis of their actions, the use of their own intellect. As if suspended in midair, each person should try to hold on to the Creator with both hands, thus allowing the Creator and only the Creator to determine one's actions. Figuratively, a person should replace one's own mind with the Creator's and act contrary to one's own reason, placing the Creator's will above one's own. If implemented, the person's behavior will represent faith above reason. Having completed the first stage, a person will be able to perceive both this world and the spiritual world. He will subsequently discover that both worlds function according to the same spiritual law of faith above reason. This willingness of a person to suppress one's own reason and be guided only by the desire to give oneself to the Creator forms the spiritual vessel in which a person receives all his spiritual understanding. The capacity of that vessel, i.e. the capacity of one's spiritual reason, is determined by the capacity of the earthly, selfish reason that one's trying to suppress. In order to increase the capacity of a person's spiritual vessel, the Creator places increasingly greater obstacles in one's spiritual path. This intensifies one's egoistic desires and doubts regarding the Creator's rule, which in turn allows for the gradual overcoming of those obstacles and the development of stronger altruistic desires. Thus, one is given an opportunity to increase the capacity of one's spiritual vessel. If one can mentally grip the Creator with both hands, that is, to ignore the critical approach of human reason and rejoice in the fact that such an opportunity has presented itself, and if one can endure this condition for at least an instant, then one will see how wonderful the spiritual state really is. This state can be reached only when a person has attained the real eternal truth, the eternal truth that will not alter tomorrow, as was the case with all former beliefs, because now the person is united with the Creator and is able to view all events through the prism of the eternal truth. Progress is only possible along three parallel lines simultaneously, with the right line being faith, the left line being cognition and comprehension. These two lines never diverge, for they are always mutually in opposition to each other. Therefore, the only way to balance them is by means of the middle line, consisting of both the right and the left lines at the same time. This middle line connotes the spiritual behavior where reason is used in accordance with the magnitude of faith. All spiritual objects, in the order that they have emerged from the Creator, are layered onto the Creator. They're coiled around Him. Everything in the universe that is layered around the Creator exists only in relation to the creations, and all is a product of the original created being called Malchut. That is, all worlds and all created beings, except for the Creator, are a single Malchut entity, meaning the root or the initial source of all beings. Malchut eventually fragments into many small parts itself. The total of the constituent parts of Malchut is known as Shekhinah, whereas the light of the Creator, His presence, and the divine filling of the Shekhinah is known as Shochan. The time required for the complete filling of all parts of the Shekhinah is called the time of correction. During this time, the created beings implement the corrections of their respective parts of Malchut. Each corrects the part from which it was created. Until the moment the Creator can fully merge with the created beings, i.e., until He reveals Himself entirely to them, or in other words, until the Shochan fills the Shekhinah, the condition of the Shekhinah, or the root of our souls, is known as the exile of the Shekhinah from the Creator, called Galut HaShekhinah, since in this condition there's no perfection in the higher worlds. Even with respect to our world, the lowest of all, each being must also fully perceive the Creator. But most of the time, everyone's occupied with satisfying their petty personal desires, characteristic of our world, as well as blindly following the demands of the body. There's a condition of the souls called Shekhinah in the dust. It's characterized by the state in which spiritually pure pleasures are considered to be superfluous and absurd, a state described as the suffering of the Shekhinah. All human suffering stems from the fact that we're compelled from above to completely reject all common sense and proceed blindly, placing faith above reason. The more reason and knowledge we possess, and the stronger and the more intelligent we become, the more difficult it is for us to follow the path of faith. Consequently, as we attempt to reject our common sense, we increase our suffering. A person who's chosen the way of spiritual development, as described above, cannot come to agree with the Creator. In his heart, he condemns the necessity of such a way. Thus, a person has difficulty in justifying the Creator. An individual cannot sustain such a condition for a prolonged period of time unless the Creator decides to help that person and to reveal the whole picture of creation to him. When one feels that one is in a state of spiritual elevation, that all of one's desires are concentrated only on the Creator, then this is the best time to delve into the appropriate texts on Kabbalah and to try to understand their inner meaning. Although one might feel that one cannot understand anything despite the effort made, it's still necessary to keep returning to the study of the Kabbalah again and again, and not to despair at a failure to understand the subject. The essential benefit of these endeavors lies in the fact that the human efforts to comprehend the mysteries of the Kabbalah are equivalent to people's prayers asking the Creator to reveal Himself to them and to satisfy their yearning to understand the Kabbalah. The strength of prayer is determined by the strength of yearning. In general, the effort invested in attaining something increases the desire to attain it, and the strength of that desire can be determined by the suffering caused by the absence of the desired object. Suffering, not expressed in words, but only in the heart, is by itself a prayer. Proceeding from the above postulation, we can understand that only after strenuous efforts to attain what is desired can we pray so sincerely that we receive it. If during attempts made to delve into the texts, one's heart is still not quite free from extrinsic thoughts, then the mind will not be able to devote itself exclusively to study, since the mind obeys the heart. In order for the Creator to accept the prayer, it should come from the depth of one's heart. That is, all one's desires must be concentrated in that prayer. For this reason, a person must delve into the text hundreds of times, even without understanding it. It is in order to achieve one's true desire to be heard by the Creator. A true desire leaves no room for any other desires. While studying Kabbalah, one examines the actions of the Creator and this way progresses towards Him. Gradually, then, a person becomes worthy of comprehending what one is studying. Faith, or the awareness of the Creator, must be such that one feels that he or she is in the presence of the King of the universe. Then, undoubtedly, one will become imbued with the necessary feelings of love and fear. Until one attains such faith, one must continuously strive for it, for it's only faith that will allow a person to enjoy a spiritual life and prevent him from sinking to the depth of egoism and once again becoming a pleasure seeker. The need for the awareness of the Creator must be cultivated until it becomes permanently entrenched in one's being. It must resemble a permanent attraction towards a loved one, without whom life seems unbearable. Everything that surrounds human beings deliberately dulls the need for divine awareness, since sensing pleasure from anything external instantly reduces the pain of experiencing spiritual emptiness. Therefore, while enjoying the pleasures of this world, it's vital to keep those pleasures from obliterating the need for perceiving the Creator, as they rob us of spiritual sensations. In general, the inner desire to perceive the Creator is characteristic only of human beings, but not of all human beings. This desire stems from a person's need to understand what one is, to comprehend oneself, one's purpose in the world, and one's origin. It's the quest for answers about ourselves that leads us to seek the source of life.